Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, February 16th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House passes federal health care nullification bill, despite an attorney general's opinion that the measure is unconstitutional. Montana governor says he won't wait for federal approval to kill some wolves. And King County prosecutor says he won't file charges against the Seattle police officer who killed Native American carver John T. Williams. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the studios of KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho House voted 49-20 today for the health care nullification law that the state attorney general says is unconstitutional. All Democrats in the House plus 7 Republicans voted against the measure. Those Republicans were Eric Anderson of Priest Lake, Tom Trail of Moscow, Max Black of Boise, Fred Wood of Burley, Leon Smith of Twin Falls, Jeff Nesset of Lewiston, and George Eskridge of Dover. The bill now goes to the Senate. The measure was sponsored by Republican Representative Vito Barbieri of Dalton Gardens, who says the federal health care bill signed into law last year is one of the federal tentacles encroaching on Idaho that the state must oppose. Barbieri is also opposed to the Environmental Protection Agency and the federal wolf recovery program under the Endangered Species Act. House Minority Leader John Roush of Lewiston told lawmakers that voting for the bill would violate their sworn oath to uphold the Constitution. The bill that moved forward today forbids enforcement of penalties under the Federal Patient and Affordable Care Act against residents of Idaho. Idaho has already received $1 million under the act, including $370,000 for the establishment of mandatory health care insurance exchanges. Idaho Department of Health and Welfare spokesperson Tom Shanahan said, "We will wait to get direction from the legislature and/or governor if the nullification bill passes. We have not received any guidance on this to date." According to the Los Angeles-based 10th Amendment Center, 10 other states are currently considering health care nullification laws. Those are Maine, Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, Oregon, South Dakota, Texas, and Wyoming. A U.S. district judge in Florida last month ruled the federal health care bill unconstitutional because it forces individuals to buy a private product, health insurance. However, the Obama administration has said it intends to appeal that ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. Republican Representative Eric Anderson of Priest Lake, who voted against the bill, said he opposed the federal health care law when it was being considered by Congress last year, but said his sense of basic civics tells him the U.S. Supreme Court should be allowed to weigh in, and in fact, the future of the union depends upon it. Anderson said, "I appreciate the angst among people about the frustration we see with the federal government, but two wrongs do not make a right." Representative Ken Andrus of Lava Hot Springs, who voted in favor, said, "I can't plow a ditch in my own field without federal government permission. I say, Uncle Sam, you bring it on." Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer announced today the state will start killing wolves that harm elk herds with or without permission from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The federal agency, which is under the Interior Department, is in charge of managing species regulated by the Endangered Species Act. Wolves are on the endangered species list in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Schweitzer also encouraged livestock owners to shoot and kill wolves if they are harassing their cattle, even in situations where the federal government does not allow it. Schweitzer said, "We will take action in Montana on our own. We've had it with Washington, D.C., with Congress just yipping about it, with Interior just vacillating about it. What we see in Washington, D.C. is motion masquerading as action." Schweitzer also sent a letter to Interior Secretary Ken Salazar saying state game wardens will stop investigating wolf killings north of Interstate 90 in Montana. U.S. Fish and Wildlife spokesperson Chris Tollefson said, "We've been in negotiations with Montana and other states for some time, and we're committed to continuing that and trying to find a solution that works for everybody." Democrats in the Idaho state legislature denounced a plan to overhaul Idaho's public schools despite changes to the legislation proposed by Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna, saying they opposed what they call a radical restructuring of the public education system in Idaho. Democrats rallied against the proposal. Public Schools Chief Luna has a sweeping overhaul plan, which calls for introducing merit pay and eliminating tenure for new teachers while expanding online courses and increasing class sizes to help pay for the reforms. The reforms would eliminate 770 teaching positions, and some of the money saved would pay for the reforms, including laptops for all ninth graders. Luna made the changes to the proposed overhaul late last week, but many of the changes are still under fire from Democrats, teachers, and concerned parents. Democrat Nicole Lefevre of Boise characterized Luna's changes to the disputed bills as cosmetic. She added Tom Luna had, quote, "Make no mistake, these bills still eliminate funding for 770 teaching positions and will force districts to lay off experienced teachers in a desperate move to save money by hiring new, less costly teachers." Tom Luna now calls the increased class sizes optional for districts, but there is nothing optional about eliminating the money for 770 teachers. "I consider the changes no more than cosmetic, and it astounds me that the superintendent would so completely fail to hear the thousands of people who have spoken to and written to us as policymakers strongly opposing these misguided proposals." Luna says schools don't have to increase classroom sizes. They could lower teacher pay instead. Twin Falls County officials say 56-year-old Hardy Albert Vermandel of Billings, Montana, was found dead in one of their jail cells at 3 a.m. yesterday of an apparent suicide. They released no other details about the death. Vermandel was arrested Monday in Twin Falls on Montana warrants for felony drunken driving, obstructing an officer, and driving without privileges. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg announced today that no criminal charges will be filed against Seattle police officer Ian Burke in the fatal shooting of Native American woodcarver John T. Williams. Although Satterberg said he was troubled by Burke's actions, he said there was no evidence to prove that Burke acted with malice or criminal intent, which are required to file criminal charges against a police officer. Satterberg said, based on the inquest into the August 15th shooting, he determined that, rightly or wrongly, Burke believed that Williams was a threat when he shot and killed him. 4 out of 8 inquest jurors had determined that Williams did not have sufficient time to put down his knife before he was shot and killed by Burke last August. Williams was holding a piece of wood and a 3-inch carving knife when he was shot by Burke. Of the other 4 jurors, 3 said they could not determine if Williams had time to put his knife down before he was shot and killed by Burke on August 30th. Only 1 juror believed that Williams had time to drop the knife. According to video evidence from a dashboard camera on Burke's police cruiser, only 4 seconds elapsed between the time Burke issued his first order to Williams to drop the knife and when Burke opened fire. The video shows Williams walking in a crosswalk, looking down at his woodblock and carver's knife. After Williams walks out of the frame, Burke is seen following him with his gun.
"Hey! Hey! Hey! Put the knife down! Put the knife down! Put the knife down!"
David 33, shots fired, Warren, hello. Subject wouldn't drop the knife.
Although Burke testified, Williams turned around and faced him with a threatening look on his face. Several witnesses said Williams never turned before he was shot and killed. Williams was wearing headphones when he was shot, and friends who knew him said he was deaf in one ear. On the second of three critical questions before the inquest jury, four jurors said that Burke believed Williams posed an imminent threat of serious physical harm when he was shot. Four jurors answered unknown. Burke had testified that he believed that Williams ignored his commands to drop the knife and believed that Williams was about to attack him. Later witness testimony contradicted Burke's testimony, with two witnesses saying that Williams did not pose a threat to Burke and was not facing Burke at the time he was shot. On the question of whether Williams posed an imminent threat of serious physical harm based on the information available at the time, four jurors believed Williams did not, three answered unknown, and one answered yes. The jurors had deliberated for 10 hours before releasing their findings. Satterberg said that while he believed that Burke had made serious tactical errors, Washington state law makes it harder to prosecute law enforcement officers than ordinary citizens, and there was not enough evidence to overcome the Shield Law. Later this afternoon, Seattle Police Chief John Diaz called a press conference to announce that, also based on the evidence in the inquest, the department's Firearms Review Board made a determination that the shooting was not justified. The Firearms Review Board had been already reviewing the physical evidence and had made a preliminary finding in October that the shooting was likely not justified, but had delayed making a final determination until the inquest was complete. Diaz said the board found that Williams did not pose a serious threat of harm and Burke's use of a firearm against Williams was not justified. The board's determination allows the police department to commence internal proceedings to decide on a disciplinary action against Burke. Speaking during the police press conference, Deputy Chief Clark Kimmerer, a member of the Firearms Review Board, said, "I have told you plainly that given the conclusions and the fact pattern that we determined and ultimately agreed to as part of the Firearms Review Board, that these are among the most egregious failings that I have seen. And the image of John T. Williams to his family, to his community, even to the officers of the Seattle Police Department, are indelibly edged and etched in our minds with grief and regret." He continued, "These are, in my experience, very profound findings. I have never authorized a final report of this kind in my 30 years in the Seattle Police Department. When we undertook the analysis of this situation, it was heart-wrenching because what we were seeing was an outcome that could have been avoided." Burke resigned from the Seattle Police Department late this afternoon. Federal prosecutors also could still bring a civil rights case against Burke. Assistant U.S. Attorney Bruce Miyake said his office has not yet made a decision whether or not to charge Burke with a federal civil rights violation. More than 300 union members and supporters showed their support for Clearwater paper workers by rallying outside the Quality Inn in Clarkston yesterday, where union representatives met indoors with Clearwater paper representatives. Clearwater paper employees are working under terms of a contract that expired in September. Clearwater paper in Lewiston is seeking concessions from its two largest unions, even though the company had a $182 million profit in 2009. Union leader Jim Kidder told the Lewiston Tribune, "Hopefully there are people in this building who will notice this crowd and will get a fair and equitable contract." You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow. Nez Perce County and the Nez Perce Tribe are in discussions on an agreement giving county sheriff's deputies and tribal police the arrest power over tribal and non-tribal members within county and reservation boundaries. The agreement, which is similar to the cross-deputization agreement between the Coeur d'Alene Tribe and the Kootenai County Sheriff's Department, would address enforcement of felony and misdemeanor statutes, but not address traffic infractions such as speeding. Under the plan, non-tribal members arrested by tribal police would go to the state court system, while arrested tribal members' cases would go through the tribal court system. Former Nez Perce County Sheriff Jim Dorian was released from Idaho Department of Correction supervision last week, nearly 2 years early. Dorian was sentenced in Idaho's 2nd District Court to a 2 to 5 year prison term for 3 counts of felony accessory to burglary while he was county sheriff. Dorian was placed on probation in December 2009. His probation was supervised by an interstate compact between Idaho and Louisiana, which is where Dorian moved after being placed on paid medical leave in May 2008. Dorian completed substance abuse counseling, remained alcohol and drug free, and paid $2,812 in court costs. The Washington State University's chapter of the American Association of University Professors is seeking clarification on WSU's financial situation. The Daily News reports WSU's 2010 state audit was clean and that the school hasn't had a finding or discrepancy on an audit for 12 years. Former WSU AAUP President Rich Aldridge said in a press release WSU has $80 million in unrestricted assets. Aldridge is requesting university administration officials sponsor an open forum to discuss the university's financial state. WSU's American Association of University Professors has scheduled a meeting for this afternoon to discuss University of Washington's experiences with collective bargaining with UW's AAUP chapter president. Research by Washington State University's Public Policy Center shows money spent on substance abuse treatment in Idaho ultimately saves money which would be spent on prisons and crime. The research found for every dollar spent on treatment costs, Idaho saves $1.38 on criminal justice costs. That means the state's $23.5 million investment in treatment programs could save $32 million in other programs. Idaho lawmakers are considering zero funding the program to help reduce the state's deficit. Idaho lawmakers are considering a bill that would require children 12 years of age or younger to wear bicycle helmets. Parents and legal guardians not complying could face a $25 fine for the first violation and a $50 fine for subsequent violations. Lawmakers on the Senate Transportation Committee are expected to take up the measure tomorrow. The Idaho Department of Labor is seeking partners for its 2011 Idaho Youth Corps Summer Employment Program. The department has $250,000 to support the program that requires matching resources from federal, state, or local governments and private employers. Agencies and organizations interested in providing a worksite for the 2011 employment program can contact Ben Phillips at area code 208-332-3570, extension 3398, or email ben.phillips@labor.idaho.gov. The phone number again is 332-3570, extension 3398. Washington State Police arrested a man around 8 a.m. yesterday after he eluded Pullman police officers Monday night when they attempted to contact him about a stolen car. 21-year-old Colin Barrett of Bremerton was arrested at Purim Hall on suspicion of possession of a stolen vehicle and a stolen credit card and obstruction of a public servant. And finally, 6 employees were evacuated from the Bank of Whitman in Clarkston Monday after an overheated furnace filled the building with a light haze of smoke. The Lewiston Tribune reports no open flames were reported and there was no damage to the building. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there'll be scattered snow showers for tonight. 50% chance of precipitation, mostly cloudy, low 25. Nighttime snow accumulation less than 1 inch possible. Snow showers likely tomorrow, 60% chance, mainly after 10 a.m., mostly cloudy otherwise, high 36. New snow accumulation less than 1 inch possible. Thursday night, a 40% chance of snow showers. New snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches possible, mostly cloudy, low 24. And a 50% chance of snow showers Friday, mainly before 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy otherwise, high 36. New snow accumulation less than a half an inch possible. Currently light snow and fog in the area, 31 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. We don't have a new edition of Building Bridges tonight, so we'll have another program shortly, either Latin Waves or Red Eye. Stay tuned. I'm Lee Robartis. Susan Austin assisted with tonight's newscast. Remember, you can help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air on a daily basis, plus the newscast you hear on Morning Mix and the various public affairs and local issues recordings that you hear throughout the day at KRFP by becoming a member to KRFP Moscow. Memberships are $35, $25 for students. You can mail checks to KRFP Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or go to the Radio Free Moscow website for more info, including that address. This is KRFP Moscow. Have a good night.